When we think of life on Earth and its history, one of the major, perhaps the most major, defining force above and beyond evolution itself in shaping life on Earth has been mass extinction events. In the 4.6 billion year history of Earth, there have been many mass extinctions, and indeed more than 3/4 of all species that have ever lived are extinct. These extinction events vastly transformed Earth's biodiversity each time they happened, whether through natural processes like highly active periods of volcanism or asteroid strikes. A good example of this is us and how we came to be here. Had the End Cretaceous extinction event not happened, which was due entirely to a chance asteroid hitting Earth that could easily have missed, this world might not have seen the same rise of the mammals that it did, and consequently, we may never have developed. And this world might still not host a technological civilization. Though in fairness, the age of the dinosaurs was waning even before the asteroid strike, so one could wonder if the rise of the mammals would have happened anyway. We'll never know. But the effect of the End Cretaceous extinction event actually can't be understated. So far as we can tell, this planet across its entire history has only hosted one single highly technological species, us, Homo sapiens. That's out of untold numbers of different species, extinct or living. But out of all of them, only humans can build a technology and use it to venture off this planet. Nothing else in the long history of Earth ever could. And it's easy to envision an Earth where, had we not come along, it might still be sitting in a perfectly natural state for a billion or more years into the future. That's an interesting solution to the Fermi paradox. That life may be common, even complex life, but civilizations and technologically capable intelligence are not. Rare intelligence is a perfectly viable solution, perhaps one of the more likely ones. And even when a world has intelligence, it may not reach high technology, as the vast majority of human history shows. Our technological growth before the Industrial Revolution was not guaranteed, and it was very, very slow. And as the many ruins of past highly developed civilizations on Earth show, it's not uncommon in history for civilizations to collapse and society get reset. Maybe this is a universe of false starts, and our own false start of our current civilization is yet to occur. At the same time, however, there is somewhat of an anomaly. The argument can be made that a number of species on Earth right now are exhibiting advanced intelligence, perhaps an unusual number, due to general mammalian intelligence. And overall, this may be the most intelligent period in the history of the Earth overall. That is not to say that there were not intelligent animals in the past that are now extinct. Rather, there may be more now than there ever has been, and it's a diverse mix, which may also be telling. There are a lot of intelligent animals on Earth right now, inhabiting many different environments, that aren't always closely related to each other. An octopus is only very distantly related to a dolphin, yet both are known for their high intelligence and problem-solving abilities. This has led some researchers to wonder if Earth actually might be in a period of an explosion of intelligence. And if that holds true for other inhabited worlds in the universe, there may come a time when technological civilization becomes likely to happen through the advancement and evolution of any number of species on any number of exoplanets. That's an unusual idea, explored a number of times in science fiction, though perhaps most famously with the Zindi of Star Trek, where a planet spawned multiple intelligent technological species, essentially all at once. Earth may eventually do this too. It's fun to imagine that in the far future, we, or whatever we become, have to adjust society and stand aside as another species joins us in the world of technological intelligence. I wonder how we would handle that. Would we put the up-and-coming species in a preserve and practice a prime directive and not interfere with their development? Or would we actively help and uplift them, or something worse? But that's only going to happen if an even greater reset doesn't happen, a mass extinction, hobbling the development of intelligent life on Earth or a similar exoplanet. The smartest species can still go extinct if the wrong asteroid comes along before they reach a stage of technology to deflect it, or a nearby gamma ray burst cooks off. This leads to a strange juxtaposition, where a mass extinction can lead to the rise of an intelligent species, but at the same time can lead to its eventual extinction, a double-edged sword indeed. The idea of how important mass extinctions are in astrobiology has recently been driven home in a new paper by R. Arthur and colleagues, link in the description below. The paper details that long-term, billions of years, repeated mass extinctions, alterations of Earth's environment, actually paved the way for the process of evolution to create more biodiversification in the aftermath, along with favoring anything that survived the extinction event that doesn't happen as much during stable, tranquil periods. This also means that as mass extinctions occur, life actually becomes increasingly robust and resilient, rather than stagnating in terms of hundreds of millions of years. Life overall gets stronger because of the extinction events. The paper actually gets into an interesting idea as far as life on Earth, which is sometimes known as the Gaian perspective, though I admit I do not really like that terminology. I see the point, but I'd have used a different term. Anyway, the idea is really about life and its relationship to Earth, specifically in how life changes and alters this world, and has done so since the very beginning in the aftermath of abiogenesis, the appearance of life on this world. It started from the beginning with the very first life metabolizing the minerals of Earth into something else and deriving energy from it. That led to photosynthesis and the rusting of Earth's iron and the filling of the atmosphere with oxygen, which was a mass extinction, leading to the death of much of the anaerobic life that had previously existed. But a weird one in that we actually don't know what all went extinct. Rather, we know that the anaerobic survivors of that extinction retreated deep into the Earth in oxygenless environments, and in the guts of oxygen-breathing organisms that developed later, including us. The whole idea is that life modifies the non-living processes of Earth, such as the carbon cycle, to maintain the conditions for life as a whole on Earth. Our own bodies in the animals and flora and fauna do this. It's homeostasis, and it involves things like blood glucose levels, salt, body temperature, and the many other things that keep us alive. And if they go even slightly off kilter, we get sick, or worse. Here this happens with life's interaction with the environment, and that life overall seems somehow to maintain homeostasis in its environments. But more importantly, change when those environments change or extinction happens. You could call it planetary homeostasis. But there are problems with this viewpoint. There are plenty of cases in the history of life on Earth where the outcome of an evolutionary process did not favor life on the whole. The Great Oxygenation Event was one of those. Ask the formerly dominant form of life on Earth if it was good for them. Again, the anaerobes. They're fine and still around, but they are not the dominant form of life in an oxygenated atmosphere, because it is poisonous to them. Indeed, some antimicrobial treatments for diseases, disinfecting, work by producing too much oxygen locally, because it's such a reactive, sometimes disruptive element, even though it's running our mammalian brains. In a Gaian perspective, the question has to be asked, if evolution truly does move towards increasing Earth's overall habitability, then why the disaster of oxygen production, which almost certainly caused the extinction of a huge amount of anaerobic species? The authors note that this may have been a relatively short-term problem, because the aftermath of it increased life's resilience in the long run, and it enabled the evolution of higher multicellular life forms with aerobic respiration, which is what we do when we breathe. In short, they suggest that the evolution of oxygen-creating life was a self-imposed period of stress that led to better life. In a sense, it's true. Earth's life rebounds. This planet has had many incidences of mass glaciation, where most of the planet has at times been covered in ice. A very different world from the Earth of today. Imagine looking at it from space, 70% or better covered in glaciers miles thick. That happened a lot in Earth's past. Some of these were worse than the ice ages of the time of the humans. The Proterozoic shows evidence of snowball Earth episodes periodically happening from 2.5 billion to 541 million years ago that dwarf the ice ages of geologically recent times. Well, not long after the last of these insane glaciation events, where Earth looked more like Europa than it does now, the Cambrian explosion happened. The Cambrian explosion represents a truly massive diversification event of life on Earth that led to really complex life like trilobites, which are not unlike things we call seafood today with complex eyes and carapaces. And while they are extinct, there's no question that the animals that arose during that period were far more complicated than what was before. Some are still here, and are very, very far from the anaerobic single-celled organisms that constituted the earliest life on Earth. So maybe stress, the cause of mass extinctions, was needed for the hyper-development of life on Earth, increasing the chances for a technological civilization to arise. That's not that far of a claim if you think about it, but if it happens here, it probably happens on other exoplanets, but maybe only to varying degrees. Too comfortable and too stable an exoplanet, and Earth apparently wasn't, which favored it, and the magic of life happens, but not the magic of complex life. It stays simple and lives within its comfortable means. Only when there is stress do things get more complicated. And it has to be said, if populations of organisms, as a whole, decrease, but habitability increases after Earth went through its trials and tribulations, such as the melting of Snowball Earth, then life can build on previous natural innovation and create something new and more complex. But here's the strange thing. We actually live in an extinction event right now, usually termed the Holocene Extinction, which in large part is being driven by our activities here on Earth at present. It's a huge extinction event as well, as much as 1,000 times the normal background extinction rate. That imposes the same kinds of stresses on the biosphere that past extinctions have. And it's scary, because past extinctions usually involve the collapse of dominant species like the dinosaurs. This is termed a keystone species. There's never been such a species as us. We are a wild card, and are the ultimate in keystone species. Interestingly, however, this all may give clues on just what planets to expect complex life to exist. Say we detect biosignatures on exoplanets, but it's unclear just how far that life has gone. We might be able to see oxygen from photosynthesis, but otherwise we know little else. But if that exoplanet appears to have circumstances of stress, then that makes it a better candidate to suspect complex life might be there. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently very concerned about the up-and-coming, increasingly intelligent octopus. If they hit technological civilization while we're still here, they're going to invent the automobile a second time, and the roads will be full of driving octopi, cephalopod road rage, insurance questions, comparisons with the Daleks. It's just going to be a huge mess. And be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.